Well, we are exactly 1 week away from Christmas Day. Apologies if that is a surprise to you. I hope your calendar has indicated that 1 week today is going to be Christmas. So I imagine for probably every single one of us, the preparations for Christmas are now in full swing. If you haven't done so already, there are trees to put up, presents to wrap, food to buy, and maybe even spare rooms to prepare for visiting family and friends. The preparations for Christmas seem to take an awfully long while, don't they? There seems to be ever more things to do, stuff to organise, things to prepare. Well, if you're feeling weary, perhaps spare a thought for the couple in Germany I read about this week. They have what looks to be a fairly normal suburban house, but inside they have decided to put up 100 Christmas trees each year and decorate them, not just put the tree in the house, but put lights and tinsel and decorations everywhere. Every single place in the house, it seems, is crammed with Christmas trees, apart from the bedroom. That apparently is a non-tree zone. And it takes them an awfully long time, as you can imagine, to get ready. It takes them over 8 weeks to get the trees in, to prepare the trees. So their Christmas preparations started way back in October. Well, I don't know whether you can feel a little bit smug now that you didn't start in October. Maybe we haven't quite spent that long preparing for Christmas, but however long we do spend, it seems, doesn't it, that the celebration of Christmas goes much quicker than the time it takes to get ready for it. Yeah, the buying of presents, the writing of Christmas cards, the organisation of all the trappings just seems to take weeks and weeks, along with everything else we've got to sort out. And then Christmas itself, well, that can go in a flash. Before we know it, it's New Year's Eve, and then it's back to work, and Christmas so quickly becomes a long-forgotten memory. So we might ask ourselves, perhaps this side of Christmas, you know, is it really worth all the effort? Probably a bit too late now, to be honest, to ask that. But maybe we do. Maybe we think, as the title of this sermon, turkey, tinsel, and all the trimmings, and that's it? Is that all that Christmas is about? Just a little bit of celebration for a few days each year. A lot of organization, not a lot to show for it. Well, if you have ever been tempted to think that way, I am here to give you some very good news this morning. Because you see, the Bible's account of Christmas tells us a vital, important fact. That Christmas is not just for Christmas. That Christmas is a history-changing and a life-changing event that makes a difference for more than just a few days each December. And to help us see the significance of this, we're going to spend just a little bit of time looking at the meaning of Christmas foretold by the prophet Isaiah in the Old Testament of the Bible. If you want to follow along, you're welcome to do so. You can find that passage that we had first read for us in page 697 of the Church Bibles. These are words written by the prophet Isaiah, written hundreds of years before that first Christmas that we heard read about. But yet, they are words that tell us about the meaning and the purpose of Christmas. Because they tell us, first of all, that at Christmas, the King has come. The King has come. You see, these words spoken through the prophet Isaiah were given at a time when God's people were under threat. The dominant superpower of the time wasn't Russia or China, it was the kingdom of Assyria. And Assyria were at the border of God's people. They were ready to attack and to conquer. And it was a time of international tension and potential conflict. So I guess it's the kind of situation that we could relate to today. And speaking to his people, God sends a message of comfort and of hope. He promises to send a king to lead his people. And he does so in a very powerful and poetic way. This is the promise of the king. He says this, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. He's using a sort of horticultural theme here, or maybe a sort of arboreal one, a tree that's just the stump. And yet a shoot will come up, a new shoot from the stump of Jesse. Now Jesse actually is a boy's name, first of all. And Jesse was the father of David. the best king from Israel's history. So this is a promise of a coming king. In the midst of tensions and difficulties of kingdoms that seem so much stronger around them, God gives a promise of a king as good as David even. A king from the family of David. God's words through Isaiah are a royal birth announcement. Now, what if you remember the royal birth announcements that we had a few years ago when the Duchess of Cambridge went into hospital to give birth, first of all, to Prince George, and then a year or two later to Princess Charlotte. And the massed media of the world gathered outside the hospital, frantically waiting for news. You may have seen that the sort of 24-hour news channels were just a sort of door for a while, just waiting for news. But when the birth was announced, it was actually done so in writing. It was done so by a decree posted outside Buckingham Palace that the Duchess of Cambridge was safely delivered of a son. Which is a very odd language, but it is exactly what it says. It is a royal birth announcement. Well, here in Isaiah chapter 11, we have the posting of a royal birth announcement. Not at the moment of birth, or just a few moments afterwards, but hundreds of years before the birth. Which is a rather curious thing to do. Nobody waits to announce a birth. Nobody announces a birth that long beforehand. But Isaiah does, because this will be, yes, a king from the family of David, but a king like no other. So he goes on to say about this king, the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. The Spirit of the Lord would reside with this promised king to come. And as a result, he would become a good king, and he would become a godly king. And what we find as we read more of this prophet Isaiah, we find he'll also be a global king. His reign will not just be for the people of Israel, but it will be for people everywhere. And as Isaiah reveals over the course of his book, the reason for that is this king will be God himself. The creator of the universe stepping into human form to be the ruler that we need. This is a king with huge history-changing significance. This is a king to look forward to. At a reception honoring the musician Sir Robert Mayer on his 100th birthday, various people from the great and the good of British society gathered, and one of them was the elderly British socialite, Lady Diana Cooper. She was very well known amongst the social circles, and she knew many people, and she fell into conversation with a very friendly woman who seemed to know her well. The trouble was, Lady Diana Cooper was getting on a bit herself. Her eyesight was failing. She didn't have her glasses with her. And so that prevented her from recognizing the fellow guest. Well, as the conversation went on, she sort of wanted to know who this was, so she peered in a bit closer and realized that this person was wearing magnificent diamonds. And she was overcome as she realized that the person that she was speaking to was none other than Queen Elizabeth herself. Overcome with embarrassment, Lady Diana curtsied and stammered, "Ma'am, oh ma'am, I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't recognize you without your crown." You see, at Christmas, we peer into the manger at Bethlehem. We see that wonderful picture on the Christmas cards of the straw and the stable and the star. And we see a king, as it were, without his crown. We see a baby, not a ruler, reflected in the majesty of that reading we had from the book of Colossians. And so we run the danger of not recognizing that this baby is a king at all. But Jesus is this king whose birth was announced by Isaiah those long years ago. Born into the family of David, born in Bethlehem, the town of David. You see, Christmas is for more than Christmas, because Christmas is a royal birth announcement that the king has come. But we can't really hear that message until we start to really get to grips with what kind of king is this? Well, Isaiah tells us he is a king who judges perfectly. He's a king who judges perfectly. Now, we know already, don't we, that our leaders make mistakes. I don't think we're under any illusion that any of our government or politicians are perfect. We know that from time to time, some of them more often than others, will make mistakes and do something silly. You may remember in the early 90s, those of you who are a certain age, Vice President Dan Quayle, who visited a school in the US during election period and asked the boy to do some spelling. He gets a child to get up and he spells potato. And Dan Quayle sort of looks at him and goes, no, no, you've misspelt it, and gets a piece of chalk and adds an E to the end, famously misspelling the words. And we could think of many other opportunities. Our wonderful ex-mayor, Boris Johnson, always seems to have a few up his sleeve. But, you know, a gaffe here or a blunder there is what we've come to expect from politicians, isn't it? Although we still stare open-mouthed and surprised whenever they do it, we know that that's what they do. We know that they're imperfect. And, of course, leaders can make more significant and more painful mistakes as well, can't they? Ones that have far-reaching and long-lasting consequences. Isaiah tells us of a king from the family of David, but King David himself was far from perfect. He may have been the best that Israel's history had to offer, but like each one of us, he was flawed and imperfect, making very dubious choices at times and downright wrong actions at others. But Isaiah here, you see, points us to this king who would come, this king who would judge perfectly. So here is a king we're told this about. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears. So here's a promise of a king who would come who would not judge by outward appearances. He's not swayed by swagger or significance or celebrity. He's not impressed by external impressions. Instead, he sees into the truth of each and every situation. Indeed, Isaiah tells us that this king who is coming, we will find, is a judge who fights for and speaks for the poor and the needy. The rich and the powerful, whose voice often gets heard, are in fact silenced. And the oppressed and the vulnerable, who are almost always unheard, are heard by him. And so, in fact, Isaiah can tell us that here is a king who is clothed in justice and fairness. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness will be the sash around his waist. He wears justice. Now, we expect royalty to be clothed in fine clothes and expensive gowns, don't we? We expect our leaders to wear 1,000-pound trousers. We expect kings and queens to wear crowns and jewels, just like Diana Cooper did. But this king doesn't look like a king from the outside. He looks like a babe in a manger. As he grows, he looks like an itinerant preacher. What purple he wears is in mockery, and any crown is one of thorns. But, says Isaiah, his garments are righteousness, faithfulness, and justice. And my friends, isn't that what we want? And isn't that what we long for? We long for a king who will be just and judge perfectly. When we see situations like Aleppo just over the course of this week, don't we cry out for someone to come and bring justice for the downtrodden? As we read about the situation in newspapers or online, as we see the pictures on our TV screens, we realize how helpless we are, and we long that someone who is able to step into that situation and do something, to bring rule into a region of such chaos and disorder, to bring righteousness where injustice and unrighteousness seems to reign. We long for a king like this, don't we? We long to see right done. We long to have the poor and the needy and the vulnerable and the oppressed heard. But as we long for that, there is, in fact, a bit of a danger. Because justice for everyone is a wonderful thing. But justice for everyone opens up the possibility that justice might need to fall on me too. You see, as I cry out for the kind of king that Isaiah talks about here, I need to ask, can I call myself only victim and never perpetrator? Can I truly say that I stand before this perfect judge who knows the truth of every situation and say that there is nothing in me that needs forgiving? Is there no way that I have mistreated my creator or his creation? Do I have nothing deserving of justice to fall? At Christmas, the king has come. And he is a king who judges perfectly. And as we begin to think about the weight and significance of that, it might now seem that Christmas is frankly a rather scary thing. But take a moment to remember the name of this king. So you may have noticed from that reading from Matthew's account of Jesus' life and death and resurrection that Mary and Joseph aren't given the privilege of picking Jesus' name. They don't go through the list of popular baby names in Bethlehem that year and think, oh, Jesus, that sounds quite nice. He looks like a bit of a Jesus. Jesus' name is given in advance by the angel. And that is because the name Jesus means something. It means God saves. See, here is a king that comes. Here, the baby in the manger is the magnificent king who judges perfectly and who also comes to save. In Jesus the King, God comes to intervene in his world. But as in the words of a contemporary Christian writer, no one could have imagined that he would ultimately intervene by interposing himself, by becoming one of the poor who was derived of his rights, by dying as one of those robbed of justice. God's Son submitted to the utmost extremity of his humiliation, entering into total solidarity with those who are without help. See, Jesus knows the needs of the lowly and the needy because he became the lowest and the poor. His royal birth, announced hundreds of years ago by Isaiah, was in a manger, not a palace. And so he entered into our fragility and brokenness from the very moment of his birth. He became one of us. And he became one of us at his death, bearing our shame and taking our guilt on himself. He came to judge and to save. But not only that, he is also a king who will restore. You see, as we look at our world today, we long, don't we, not only for justice to be done, but for creation to be made new. We see a world torn apart by war, environmental catastrophe, human greed, and overconsumption. And so we need a king who will not only bring justice and save us from justice, but restore a broken world. And that is exactly what Christmas promises us. It shows us a God who does not stand apart and aloof from his creation, but rather a God who steps down into his creation to save and to restore. And we get a picture of what that restoration looks like in these words from Isaiah. What an extraordinary picture it is. Let me remind you of some of the words. As Isaiah looks forward to the reign of this king, he says, "The wolf will live with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the goat." As Woody Allen famously quips about this verse, that may be true, but the goat won't get much sleep. We know, don't we, that that's not the way things normally are at the moment. A leopard with a goat, we know what will happen. There will be no goat left. We know that this isn't the way the world operates. You may remember back in October that a gorilla escaped his enclosure in London Zoo. He took an opportunistic exit through unlocked doors and roamed through a secure keeper's area before they finally managed to return him back to his den. Not before he'd managed to track down and drink 5 litres of undiluted blackcurrant squash. I didn't know blackcurrant squash was particularly attractive to gorillas, but apparently it is. Now, when that happened, they rightly called the police. I'm sure the police were excited about that. They're very well trained for capturing gorillas, I'm sure. They called the police, they worked out, they evacuated the zoo. What they didn't do is say, oh, it's all right. The gorilla's escaped. Well, you know, he needs a bit of fresh air. Let him wander around. It doesn't matter. Having a 29-stone gorilla wandering about, that's not a problem, is it? You know, the zoo knew this wasn't a good situation. There was a right place and a wrong place for that gorilla to be. We know that the kind of world that is pictured here is not the world we currently live in. If you put a leopard and you put a goat together, you know what will happen. And it goes beyond that. In fact, these verses have a tremendous example of very bad parenting. So, the infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young child will put his hand into the viper's nest. Now, let me just say, just because it's in the Bible, this is not behavior to be recommended. Those who are parents, you know that this is not what you should do. And if you're going to do some babysitting, this is not what you want your babysitter to do. You come back after a nice evening out and you say, how was the little Johnny? He said, well, we played with the cobra for a bit. That was nice. And then, I went to get some food and I just left him in the viper's den and we'll see what happens. But I think he'll be all right. We know, don't we, that this is a dreadful thing to do. We know that the world in which we live is full of danger and harm. Yeah, if you've been watching the latest David Attenborough documentary on TV, Planet Earth 2, you'll know it's full of wonderful animals, beautiful photography, but it's full of bloodshed and violence. The leopard doesn't lie down with the goat unless it's had a very full meal. But Isaiah here promises a reversal of all of this, to put back right what is broken in God's creation, to restore and renew once again, to bring in a new creation to be enjoyed, that where there is harm, there will be safety. Where there is conflict, there will be peace. Where there is danger, it will be eliminated. Don't we long for that? We'd love you to come along to a little course that we're running in January. It's called The World We All Want. It's reflected in this kind of picture from Isaiah, to think about the world that we want and the world that God promises. But all of this is possible because this king is going to return. Jesus, who was born in a manger and died on a cross, also rose again to new life. And he ushered in this new creation on that Easter day when he defeated death once and for all. And he will return to complete his work. He will return not as a baby in Bethlehem, but as a king in all his power and glory. So the question for us this Christmas, and not just at Christmas, is how will we respond to this king before he appears? A preacher was once speaking to Queen Victoria about this whole subject of Jesus as king and his return. And Queen Victoria responded, "I wish Jesus would come in my day." Well, the preacher was intrigued and he asked, "Why do you respond that way?" And the queen replied, "I would so love to lay my crown at his feet." That's what those magi do. I mean, we talk about them being three kings. It doesn't really say they're kings. But what they do is they come looking for a king. They come to Herod asking where the king will be. Herod asks the teachers of the law. They say Bethlehem, and off they go. And they find Mary and Joseph and the infant Jesus. They came looking for a king. But what do? They don't make a treaty. They don't start to agree trade agreements. They don't send ambassadors. they bow and they worship. The question for us today, this Christmas, through the whole of our lives is, do we see this King in the manger? Do we see this King who judges perfectly and saves perfectly? Do we see this King who comes to restore? And will we bow the knee to? Let me pray. Our gracious and loving Heavenly Father, we look at our world, your world, so broken and in need, and we long for justice to be done, for wounds to be healed, for creation to be restored. We thank you that that work was begun at Christmas in sending your Son, the majestic and mighty King who was promised. We thank you that justice was done in his death on the cross so that we might be forgiven, as well as long for justice to be done. And we thank you that one day he will return and bring that new creation to all its fullness. And as we wait for that day, this Christmas and forevermore, enable us to bow the knee before this wonderful and loving King. Amen.